You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Tuesday, January the 23rd. Lots of news stories in the news this morning regarding global warming, like this one. An international scientific report coming out next week does not hedge on global warming. It says flatly that people are helping cause it, and that the problem is sure to get much worse. Details from the report won't be released to the public until February 2nd. An American climate scientist who has reviewed the first phase of the report from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change says the evidence is compelling. Jerry Malmen, who used to work for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, says, quote, "The smoking gun is definitely lying on the table." A senior scientist who now works for NOAA says the report contains an explosion of new data. The two warmest years on record for the world, according to the report, were 2005 and 1998. So, more information on that report being released to the public on February 2nd. Meanwhile, the chief executives of 10 major corporations and business groups yesterday, on the eve of President Bush's State of the Union address, urged him to support mandatory reductions in climate-changing pollution and to establish reduction targets. Word has it that the president will address global warming in his State of the Union address tonight, but he will stop short on actually calling for mandatory reductions in greenhouse gases. However, he will look to technology and address technology as a way to reduce them. We will wonder what our guest this hour thinks of all this news and whether he thinks this is an overreaction. He is the co-author of a book called Unstoppable Global Warming, Every 1500 Years. The book says that the Earth's warming trend, is indeed happening, but it isn't a product of human activity. It is caused by a solar-linked cycle that creates harmless, naturally warming temperatures approximately every 1,500 years. So we will talk about global warming and whether it's man-made or not. And we will welcome your questions for our guest at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is Dennis Avery. He's been a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute since 1989. He is the author of Saving the Planet with Pesticides and Plastic, and he's co-author with Fred Singer of Unstoppable Global Warming, Every 1500 Years. And he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
So tell me first about your co-author. He is a climate scientist.
Fred is an eminent climate scientist. He was the founding dean of the School of Environmental Studies at the University of Miami. He was in charge of the first high-altitude weather balloon program for collecting temperatures from the lower atmosphere at the Department of Commerce. For 5 years, he was vice chairman of the U.S. Advisory Commission on Oceans and Atmospheres.
Yeah. Now, would he be, as critics might charge, a scientist for hire or...
Well, when you can't refute the science, you attack the scientist. No, Fred is not a scientist for hire. He is not in favor of smoking. But he does, as I agree with, say there is no evidence that passive smoking is a danger.
Yeah, and he also, and you agree, say that there's no evidence that man is contributing or the cause of global warming.
We have warming, and we know two things about it. We know that every 90,000 to 100,000 years, we get an ice age, and then it ends, and that the interglacials like ours usually last about 10 to 12,000 years. The second thing we know, and we know it from the ice cores in Greenland and the Antarctic, is that we have a little moderate 2 degrees up, 2 degrees down at the latitude of Madison every 1,500 years. We discovered this first in the early 1980s from the Greenland ice core that went back 250,000 years, and the ratio of heavy oxygen isotopes to light oxygen isotopes tells us the temperature when the ice was formed. And so this is a layered history of the Earth's temperatures going back a quarter of a million years. And 5 years later, we dug up an even longer core in the Antarctic that went back 450,000 years. And here was this little 1,500-year cycle superimposed even on the ice ages.
Yeah. So why is this significant, this research that you put in the book?
Well, it's significant primarily because most of our warming this time came before 1940 and thus before much human-emitted CO2. About 70% of it came before 1940. After 1940, human CO2 emissions soared strongly. World War II and the post-war boom and the spread of industry around the world, and our temperatures went down for 35 years. If this had been a CO2 warming, we would have expected it to have started in 1940 and trended strongly upward. Instead, it started in 1850, and it, since 1940, it's been quite erratic. And that fits the pattern of the 1,500-year cycles, which are frequently abrupt, and this argues for the external forcing, the linkage to the sun. They start quickly. The 50% of the warming often comes in the first few decades, and then they move erratically for several hundred years until the sun shifts them into the other gear.
Well, I wonder what you have to say then when the news this morning says that an international scientific report coming out next week will say flatly that, yes, global warming is here, and you're not denying that, but that people are helping to cause it, and it's going to get worse.
Well, the IPCC has said this before and not given us any very strong evidence, and let's face it, there are a lot of people playing a guilt game over the human aspect, the human contribution. Now, I'm not saying, Fred and I are not saying, that human CO2 emissions are not contributing at all. But if 70% of the warming came before 1940, and our net warming since 1940 is 2 or 3 tenths of a degree Celsius, if I give human CO2 half of the warming since 1940, that's it's hard to build a scary scenario out of a tenth or 1.5 tenths of a degree over 65 years when we know that each additional unit of CO2 has less forcing power in the atmosphere.
Yeah. So then you don't think, though, while you're saying that there could be some contributions from CO2 emissions from humans, do you think that it would be wise to cap these pollutants?
Well, people buy life insurance because death is pretty final. Are they going to buy global warming insurance for a warming that's likely to be 2.5 degrees Celsius? And are they going to buy that insurance if the premium is giving up 80% of our current energy system and trying to find something other than fossil fuels and nuclear that will heat our homes and run our air conditioners and keep the lights on in the hospital operating room?
Yeah. So you don't believe that, based on the evidence that you and Fred Singer have examined, that there is any reason for us to be alarmed? A lot of us saw An Inconvenient Truth by Al Gore and were very alarmed.
Well, I saw it myself, and I think there are two major things that bother me about Al Gore's movie. The first is the graph he showed with temperature and CO2 moving radically up and down, but very closely together through 400,000 years and four ice ages. And Al Gore's movie left you with the strong impression that more CO2 caused radical changes in temperature. The reality is, and the science on this is published and very clear, that the temperatures change 800 years before the CO2 levels. In other words, more CO2, more higher temperatures cause more CO2 in the air, not the other way around. And this is very logical because the oceans are the big repository of CO2. They hold about 75 times as much as the air. And cold water holds more gas than warm water. So if the sun changes if the sun starts warming the earth, 800 years later, the water has had time to warm up, and it's given off CO2 to the air, and presto, you have more CO2 in the atmosphere. So that's not convincing. The other really awful thing is his implication that somehow the Antarctic ice cap is going to melt suddenly and raise the sea levels 20 feet. This is not physically possible. The Antarctic ice cap is in the coldest place on Earth. It's been getting colder since 1965, and the temperatures just never get warm enough to melt. The ice flows to the sea in big blocks based on the angle of descent in the land, and that angle and that the pace of that downward flow has, according to scientists, been about the same for the last 7,000 years. So the idea that, you know, suddenly this is all going to change and the Antarctic is going to flood us, there's absolutely no scientific support for that.
Our guest is Dennis Avery. He is the co-author with Fred Singer of the book Unstoppable Global Warming, Every 1500 Years, which argues that global warming is a natural phenomenon that occurs approximately every 1500 years and is not primarily caused by human-emitted greenhouse gases. We welcome your thoughts and questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll join Ben Marins. It's At Issue with Ben Marins between 4 and 6 this afternoon. After 5, Ben will welcome in Wisconsin Public Radio's resident historian, Randall Davidson. Randall, also the author of the new book, 9XM Talking, WHA Radio and the Wisconsin Idea. Ben and Randall will talk about, with you, the first 90 years of public radio in Wisconsin. So it should be a fun hour this afternoon after 5 o'clock. A reminder that President Bush delivers his State of the Union address tonight at 8 o'clock. We will carry that address live here on the Ideas Network, followed by the Democratic response. And we'll also hear post-speech analysis, and we'll do a lot of that post-speech analysis tomorrow morning on this program between 6 and 9. We'll invite in guests from many different perspectives to talk with you about what the president had to say. Word has it that the president will address the global warming issue in his State of the Union address tonight, but according to this Wire story, he will stop short on calling for mandatory reductions in greenhouse gases, but he will say we need to do more to combat global warming, and we should look to technology to try to reduce greenhouse gases. Do you think, Dennis Avery, President Bush is overreacting?
Well, people have been accusing him so far of underreacting. I'm not terribly interested in the political fight on this. That will sort itself out over time. But I think we have to resolve the factual basis for all of this. And as I've pointed out to you, we don't really have anything other than assertions that humans are causing it. Now, on the question you brought up earlier about buying the insurance, I think we ought to make the point that until very recently, the medieval warming, the last warming before this one that we have in history, was called the medieval climate optimum. It was the finest weather anybody could remember.
So global warming is good for us.
Well, it was then. It was then, and probably it was warmer then than today. And I say this on the basis, among other things. We know from the Roman records that when they occupied Britain in the first century, they grew wine grapes there. And then during the Dark Ages, it was too cold. And then the Domesday Book, the British tax records from the 11th century, tell us that the Brits were growing wine grapes in Britain at that time in the height of the medieval warming. There were close to 50 vineyards. And then during the Little Ice Age, after 1300, it was too cold, and there were no grapes grown in England between 1300 and 1950. Today they have what they call a wine industry, but basically it's a hobby industry. They have about 400 vineyards, many of them growing hybrid grapes that are bred to be cold tolerant, and really not much in the way of commercial production, and they say they're still only getting about 2 really good years out of 10. But they're hopeful for the future. But this introduces the idea of a cycle in a graphic way, and it probably is a pretty good indicator that the medieval warming was warmer than today so far.
Well, we get this international scientific report coming out next week, which we'll get more details on next week. The two warmest years on record for the world are 2005 and 1998. So you're
but you remember this is a 1500 year cycle, and our records go back 100 years. We started using thermometers just at the moment when the world was coming out of the Little Ice Age, and we should expect that our years now are warmer than 1850. When George Washington was fighting the American Revolution in the depths of the Little Ice Age, the British, when they occupied New York City, were hauling cannon across the harbor on the ice.
Let me get some callers in on this. Our lines are full, and I want to give them a chance to ask questions. Mike in Castle Rock, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I think it's all pretty interesting what you've just said. I haven't heard that before. But even if you're correct, though, or if somebody is correct, I can't believe that all the industrialization and the byproducts are doing the world any good. We are going to run out of fossil fuels, and this could be. There's more people coming into the world. Wouldn't it be a good thing if we just paid attention to this, thought about global warming, call it what you like, and got better at managing the environment?
Well, that's an interesting point of view and one that's often presented to me. And the problem is the environmental and people costs. Now, just as an example, we're using 80 million tons a year of fertilizer around the world, and that helps us triple the crop yields and feed 6 billion people and still have 16 million square miles of forest. That nitrogen fertilizer is produced primarily with natural gas, almost entirely with fossil fuels. If we give up 80% of the current energy system, it sounds like we're going to also have to give up the nitrogen fertilizer, at which point the crop yields drop by half, and we have to clear the remaining 16 million square miles of forest in order to feed the people. Or we have to accept a lottery system in which a quarter of the people, or however many, have to accept starvation. This is not a no-regrets policy.
Thanks to Mike. Next we go to Scott in Green Bay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning. I just had two quick points. One of them has to do with the science on it. When we keep hearing that there's a consensus of scientists that believe in global warming, but can't have consensus in science, because if you have consensus, you don't have science. Science is one person proving something to be fact. it is irrelevant if there's a consensus. And we could have a consensus of scientists, and we did at one time, that said the Earth was flat. But that didn't make it true. The other thing I wanted to mention is there was a great article in the Canadian Free Press regarding an inconvenient truth. And there were scientists from PhD climatologists from Sweden, from Canada, and from Australia who really said that the assumptions in that movie were horrific. And it was a great article, and I don't know if your guest has seen it, and I know nobody else has really seemed to pick it up, but it seems like the voices of that disagree that there's global warming seem to be fairly silent, and you don't really hear much rebuttals to an inconvenient truth.
I'm so glad you brought up the point of consensus. I've forgotten your name, the listener who was just
Scott.
On.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't had any real broad survey of scientists on this. The closest we've come was a survey by a German in 2003 who surveyed several hundred climatologists in 27 countries. 34% of them agreed with the concept of man-made warming. 21% rejected it. The others were unsure. That's really not consensus. And I agree with the listener that consensus is not the point. In our book, we cite more than 100 peer-reviewed studies of scientists, probably four authors per report, scientists who found physical evidence of climate cycling in the Earth's past, from the ice cores that we mentioned, from seabed sediments in six oceans, from cave stalagmites on every continent plus New Zealand, glacier advances and retreats, in response to the temperature changes, Little Ice Age, medieval warming, Dark Ages, Roman warming, and the unnamed cold period before the Romans. And we could have cited 300 such studies, probably 1,500 authors, whose own work has documented previous climate change that had nothing to do with human-emitted CO2.
Let me ask you, though, Dennis Avery, this consensus of scientists, if 80% of the climate scientists say, yes, man is contributing to this and this is a problem, and 20% say we disagree, doesn't that mean that the majority of scientists reviewed the evidence and there is a consensus?
Two-thirds of the scientists said we don't believe in it or we don't know.
Yeah. What about this report
34% said we believe it.
I did a program within the last year, and I wish I had it in front of me, but it was the National Institute of Science here in the U.S. that came out with a report on global warming. It was a report that was commissioned by Congress. The executive summary would say that, yes, the Earth is warmer now than it's ever been, and, yes, man is contributing to it.
If you're talking about the National Academy of Science report, what they said was that today is the warmest that it's been in at least 400 years.
Yeah.
Well, it's a 1,500-year cycle. The last warming ended in about the year 1300, and the Little Ice Age ended about 1850. We had surges of warming between 1850 and 1870. We've had a surge recently from about 78 to 98. We had a very similar surge between 1916 and 1940. So what we have here is a short thermometer record, a long proxy record, and a long moderate cycle that nobody even deciphered until 1984, because it required long written records and accurate thermometers.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I don't know if it was clear as to how this was determined. These are from ice cores taken out of Greenland, or how is this determined that this is happening every 1,500 years?
Our first realization of this long, moderate cycle came from the Greenland ice cores. And the ice cores are still probably the most accurate of the temperature proxies that we have going back into prehistory. But we have dozens of these proxies, and they come from all over the world. Cave stalagmites from Ireland, Germany, Oman, South Africa, and New Zealand. And again, layered history that through the oxygen isotopes tells us the temperature. Very often the mineral deposits in the stalagmites also tell us whether it was dry or wet, things of that sort.
We'll go next to Sandy in Algoma. Hi, Sandy.
Yes, hi. I have to say that I really disagree with this professor, and I'm really shocked that he would spit this stuff out when 7/8 of the world's developed countries and the scientists on them agree that we are causing global warming. Not only that, but he says that if it gets warm, that we have to, or if we give up our energy, we also have to face starvation and stuff. You know what? What happened? What about sustainable development? We don't have to use petroleum to live well, and we don't have to use petroleum fertilizers on our fields, which also pollute our lakes, which also contaminate our drinking water. I'm just furious that I would have to believe that he is on the payroll of the coal and the gas companies, because nobody else. I've never heard anybody else come up with this kind of hogwash.
Hold on, Sandy. 7/8 of the developed world believes differently, Dennis Avery?
Well, I mentioned to you the broadest survey I know of climate scientists done by a German scientist named Dennis Bray, who in fact believes in man-made global warming. And he surveyed, I think it was 500 climatologists in 2003 from 27 different countries, and 34.7% of them agreed with the statement that humans were causing significant global warming. 21% said they're not, and the rest said we don't know. But again, I'm really not in a voting mode. I'm talking about several hundred peer-reviewed scientific studies with more than 1,000 authors in such specialties as dendrochronology, which is tree rings, and the guys who study stalagmites, and the people who study ice formation, and biologists looking at changes in the patterns of bird habitat and Arctic fox habitat, and more than 1,000 of them have signed peer-reviewed studies saying, yes, we see this cycling. So it's really not a matter of I don't want to hear this or I don't like that idea. We have evidence for the cycle. We don't have evidence. There may be some. I keep looking for it. We don't have evidence that human CO2 emissions are making much of a difference. And I want to emphasize that the ice cores themselves contain beryllium-10 traces, and beryllium-10 is a counter-indicator of solar activity. We get more beryllium-10 falling created on the Earth when the sun is weak. Carbon-14 is the same. We find the carbon-14 in the tree rings. And these indicators, plus the sunspots, all tell us that the solar radiation changes have caused this 1,500-year cycle on our planet. And we have a new book coming out in March by a Danish physicist who says the link is cosmic rays. And cosmic rays slam into our Earth and hit water droplets in the atmosphere and create more or fewer of the low wet clouds that cool the Earth, that reflect the sun's heat back out into outer space.
Now, Sandy brought up, and this charge was made in Al Gore's movie, too, and I'd like you to address it again. We touched on it earlier in the hour, but didn't go into any detail. That being that any scientist or those scientists who doubt human contribution to global warming are on the payroll of greenhouse gas emitting industries.
Well, personally, I can say that I have a full federal pension. I worked for 29 years for several departments in Washington, D.C., and I get half a salary from the Hudson Institute, and the funding for this book came from a gentleman named Wally Sellers, who's on the Hudson Board, who for many years was a senior executive with Merrill Lynch. He's now retired. I know of no linkage between Mr. Sellers and the coal or oil industries. He was once involved with a natural gas company, but then natural gas has benefited from the scare about CO2 because we've tried to burn natural gas instead of coal or oil.
We are talking with Dennis Avery. He is the co-author with Fred Singer of the book Unstoppable Global Warming, Every 1500 Years. The book argues global warming is a natural phenomenon that occurs approximately every 1500 years and is not caused by human-emitted greenhouse gases. Dennis Avery, a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute since 1989 as well. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up, Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock. Kathleen and her guest will talk about Hillary Clinton, former First Lady and Democratic Senator from New York. She's considered her party's front runner in the presidential race. But why is that? More after 9. We're talking about global warming with a guest who says, yes, there's global warming, and it's unstoppable. It happens naturally, cyclically, and it is not caused by human activity. There might be some contribution by human activity, but it is not caused by human activity, according to Dennis Avery and Fred Singer, authors of Unstoppable Global Warming. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. John in La Crosse is with us next. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a couple of different questions. The first one being, I had heard somewhere, at least thought I had heard, that we are they're experiencing on Mars melting of the ice caps. I was wondering if that was true.
Well, I don't know firsthand about that research. I've read the same news stories you have. It would be interesting if the cosmic ray linkage worked on Mars the same way it works on the Earth. I think it's way too soon to speculate on that, but it's an interesting question to try to answer in the future.
Also, second question, wasn't Greenland called Greenland because of the Vikings who appeared there, and it was green as opposed to being ice-covered like it is now?
The first pages of the book, in fact, talk about the Greenland experience, and you're exactly right. Not only did Eric the Red call Greenland Greenland, because the edges of it were green, and they pastured their cattle, and they had, at its height, a colony of about 3,000 people and 12 churches with their own bishop. But his son, Leif Erikson, in search, basically, of timber, went on west, found land. It was full of grapes. They called it Vinland. And we have since found the spot where they landed and made their winter camp, and it's in Newfoundland. Now, nothing really says global warming cycles more clearly than people landing in Newfoundland and naming it after the grapevines. For years, we wondered where in the world they could have found grapevines in Newfoundland, and They were easy to find because the climate was warmer.
Thanks to John. Paul in Madison is with us now. Hello.
Good morning. Last week, or 2 weeks ago, there was a story about Greenland again, where they're talking about that Greenland has 6 major ice sheets, and one of them broke off. And the scientists, I guess the other scientists, are very concerned about this. They're convening a review of this to find out what's going on. I'm not sure where this sudden rise in ocean water that you talked about before came from, because scientists always believed that the melting in Greenland would happen slowly. And instead, this happened, and now they are really concerned about what's going to be happening there because they weren't expecting this. So are you going to be attending that conference, or have you heard about this, or what is actually going on in Greenland?
Well, we've had the same kind of furor about ice blocks dropping off the edge in the Antarctic, too. It is getting warmer. Let's make no mistake about this. And what would we expect in a warming but a decline of the... Well, I shouldn't say that, because this is counterintuitive. What happens in a warming, so far that we've observed, is that the melting occurs around the edges, but the increased warmth produces more evaporation of water from the oceans, which then turns into more snow and rain for the Earth, and the ice actually builds up at the center of the ice caps in both Greenland and the Antarctic. And recently, both, I guess it's primarily satellite measurements, tell us that the East Antarctic ice sheet has been increasing its mass, and we've had similar kinds of reports that the center of the ice sheet in Greenland is increasing its mass. And both of these are consistent with what we would expect during a global warming, along with increased melting around the edges. But when we talk about these blocks of ice falling off the ice sheets, remember that's because they don't melt. They flow slowly downhill due to their own weight, and when they reach the edge, if they haven't melted, then they're going to fall.
Next, we'll go to David in Ironwood, Michigan. Hello.
Hello. I want to point out another natural warming. The Precambrian extinction was, they think, caused by volcanoes going off in Russia, which raised the CO2, which caused the ocean water temperature to rise to the point where the anaerobic bacteria literally took over the oceans. The 80% of the animal life on the planet died. I mean, just because it's natural doesn't mean we should just stand by and let it happen.
Well, you're absolutely correct that we've had horrific events in the past, not only the extinction that you talked about, but the asteroid collisions that have apparently been responsible for 5 or 6 major extinctions of plant and animal life. And the problem is not that we should applaud this, but to date, there's certainly nothing we can do about an asteroid collision. And if this warming cycle that we've seen on the Earth, and it goes back to, through the last million years, if that's linked to the sun, and the sun is a million times larger than the Earth, and the coronal temperatures that surround it reach a million degrees, and we're linked by cosmic rays coming from all over the universe, it's pretty hard to expect that we're going to do anything effective to stop it.
Yeah. So then you would tell Andre in Wauwatosa, who sent this email, what is the point of arguing about the cause? If intelligence tells us we are warming for a cycle of 1,500 years, and we can tell that fossil fuels are not helping, let's stop the foolishness of arguing about major or minor causes and at least be proactive to stop enabling the warming to make it even worse. So just throw up our hands, never mind, it doesn't matter, don't reduce any of this because it doesn't matter, it's unstoppable, Dennis Avery?
Well, I'm not sure exactly how Wisconsin is going to heat its homes if we give up the fossil fuels. Nuclear plants, those don't seem to be very popular. Cutting trees, well, I have a wood-burning furnace on my farm, but I've got 30 acres of woods and 100 acres of land and no near neighbors, and I'm not breathing in the smoke from the fire inside the house. The solar panels work if you're in Arizona, and they work when the sun is shining, but the transmission losses, if we try to move the power from the Arizona sun to Wisconsin, would be horrific. Wind power works if the wind is blowing at the right speed, but you have to have some sort of spinning reserve power plant to take over when the wind drops too low or gets too strong. We just haven't found a dense, cost-effective alternative to fossil fuels except nuclear.
Jackie in Kenosha is with us. Hello.
Hello. I think I'm echoing what your email just said. I would just like to hear your guest's comments on, you know, what has his research done to prove that this 1,500-year cycle still isn't being impacted by the increase in the fossil fuel gases. I mean, there has to be something that could show that it's increasing rather than just staying the same. I mean, can you point to something that shows that there has been no increase?
Well, what I point to is the fact that 70% of the warming we've had occurred before 1940, and there's no reason to believe that this warming cycle has disappeared just because World War II ended. So I'm willing to concede 15% of the warming that we've had since 1850 as being possibly linked with human CO2 emissions. That comes out to about one-tenth or slightly more of a degree Celsius over 65 years with a declining incidence over time. That doesn't sound very scary.
Yeah, I did read one critic of your work or this research saying, conveniently, it stops in 1985, and it's been escalating since then.
What stops in 1985?
The research that you examined.
Oh, heavens no. The research is going on continually. In fact, one of the most interesting things occurred quite recently. It's a NOAA report. In order to get real accurate sea surface temperatures for the first time, we've put out 2,500 smart floats around the world's oceans. And NOAA says those floats tell us that there was a sudden ocean cooling between 2003 and 2005, and the oceans, which are the big repository of heat on the planet, lost 21% of the heat they'd gathered in the previous 50 years. And NOAA also said that this data confirmed what they'd suspected but hadn't been able to document, that there'd been a previous sudden ocean cooling between 1980 and 83. Now, these are events that the global climate models are completely unable to handle. The climate models are built in increments. They're built on trends. And these sudden, unpredictable events throw the climate models into a tizzy. You have to question, in fact, whether the climate models are effective at all if the Earth's real driving forces are sudden and only semi-predictable, like the 1,500-year cycle, or like these sudden ocean coolings that NOAA now says, yes, definitely occurred, and the heat is not here on the planet.
Paul in Madison, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a question for Dr. Avery in regards megacycles and in climate change. For example, the Cretaceous was a warm period. I used to work for Shell Oil. We did exploration in the north, in the northern part of Alaska, and you can find, you know, tree leaves, temperate type vegetation. And even then, was a northern location, and the Cretaceous was, you know, for 100 million years, it was warmer than usual. There were no ice caps, no glaciers. And just what if these megacycles are also in the record? And how? What if we're messing with the megacycle? What if you know, we had a lot of CO2 being emitted from like the Siberian flood basalts, also the Pacific Northwest flood basalts, pumped a lot of CO2 into the atmosphere. Just so happens the Cretaceous was a warm, very warm period. That CO2 was eventually taken out of the atmosphere by increased sedimentation of carbon, and a lot of our oil source rocks date from the Cretaceous.
Paul, I'm sorry, we're running short on time, and I'm
okay.
What is your point? What's your point?
Megacycles are also in the record. What if we're going to start another megacycle, not this 1,500-year thing, but 100-million-year thing?
Well, I think one of the consistent themes through human history is that we overestimate our own importance. The idea that humans can create a megacycle. We better document first that they've created the current warming, and we haven't documented that. We haven't documented even a significant contribution. I think it's real early to be talking about humans triggering megacycles.
And I think we have... I'm going to ask. I have an email from Sarah who says that, and I don't remember exactly what you said. She says the Hudson Institute received money from, among others, ExxonMobil and General Electric. This info is from 2002, but it shows that at some point you've gotten funding from such groups. This is an important point to most people on this topic, Dennis Avery. Is that right?
I understand that. I think that Exxon, over the 15 years that I've been with Hudson, has contributed twice $10,000 each time. I don't know to what, if they contributed to a particular project or just to general support. Again, I can tell you that the funding for this book came from one of the board members, a guy named Wally Sellers, comes out of the New York financial community. He may have had stock in coal or oil companies. More likely, he had a broad portfolio of stocks. And he didn't tell me what to write in the book. He just said, is there a reason for Hudson to do a global warming book? Is there a book that's needed? Mm-hmm. And I said, I think the world needs a book on the previous climate changes on the Earth.
And we will leave it there. The book is Unstoppable Global Warming. Thanks for being with us. Dennis Avery, co-author with Fred Singer of Unstoppable Global Warming Every 1500 Years. Thanks to Carmen Jackson and to Cale Plowman for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.